Cape Talk. Cape Talk. Call Pippa Hudson now.
021-446-0567.
Well, the Brain of Kirsten Bosch is with us in studio today with a head full of fruit. It's lovely to have Charisse Viljoen, horticulturist from Kirsten Bosch, back with us. And for the first time in 2020, so I get to say Happy New Year, Charisse.
Thank you, Pippa. Compliments of the season to you and to the listeners.
And may the year be full of greenery and flowers in your garden. We are going to talk specifically about fruit trees today. So it's a good day to phone in if you are battling with one of those or if you've got the inevitable question about the lemon tree. We are standing by on 021-446-0567. Of course, you can also leave a voice note on any other general gardening topic on 072-567-1567 or send an SMS to 31567. Why fruit trees, Charisse?
Yes, I had a moment of madness at our last time I was on the show in December, and I constantly, although my area of knowledge and experience is in indigenous plants, of course the listeners can phone in and ask me anything. They do often ask me about fruit trees. I can feel completely out of my depth. So feeling brave, I said, bring on the fateful fruit tree questions. Now I'm shaking in my boots.
No, don't be silly. You come armed with lots of supporting documentation to help you answer the questions as well. So there will be informed responses, we promise. Call us now on 021-446-0567. One email already in earlier in the week is from Amelia. The strawberries. Poor old Amelia says, my strawberries survived throughout the winter. The plants were looking great. I was really excited to be able to taste my first harvest. But as we headed into the warmer months, they all just died suddenly. What could I have possibly done wrong? They look a little lopsided, she says, and small. But up until the warmer weather, they did appear to be in good health.
Most likely is that they can get very dense when they put on all their growth. And within that density, you can get some insect infections, you can get some fungal growth. We're watering a little bit more thinking they're dry. Mm. And quite often it's the rot in the center of the plant that kind of causes it to die off. And that would explain the lopsidedness as well. They tend to crawl off in a direction if left to go. And the other complaint I often find is that the strawberries, you can't get to them before the insects have.
Yes.
But if you just lay them on a bit of straw or elevate them up in a higher pot or a hanging bar, basket, you find that a lot of the ground insects that enjoy them then can't get to them. So that watering is really key in thinning them out if they're getting a bit too dense in the center.
I'm smiling because as I left the school my kids used to attend, and I'm no longer there, but as we left that building in Mowbray, driving around the corner was a house who had built a vertical garden on the side of the house, and they had a white tube with strawberries just cascading out of them in season. And every time we drove past, I thought, gosh, I'm surprised I'm not seeing school children scaling the wall, trying to pick them and eat them because they looked luscious. So what you've said about raising them off the ground, those were sort of at head height and above. And they just looked like they were in flourishing health with nothing worrying them at all.
They absolutely love it. And growing them hydroponically works really well as well, because it doesn't have all the soil insects and diseases. It feeds them as much as they need to be. They're constantly watered, but not in you know, the soil doesn't get soggy because they're growing in the water. Their roots have adapted to it.
Yeah.
And any kind of elevation on strawberries I find works really, really well. And they're sweet.
Oh, what a delight. Okay, Amelia, so there's something to look for. I'm really, really sorry that this crop didn't work out, but maybe some lessons to learn when you do try again this year, and better luck to you with the second crop. Let's go to the lines. And Anthea in Somerset West, the tree tomatoes. So nice to hear from you again. Hello.
You know what? It's a never-ending story. I can quickly tell. All three had flowers. And the flowers came off, and it looked as something I them. But in any case, I chased. So eventually one tree had one little fruit. So, but the leaves kept hanging, no matter how much water. So I went to Ben Bell, and the guy there, Siegfried, he knows it all. He says, take the crystals and then work it in a little bit, and then work it in, and then another layer of soil, work it in, and then take this blah, blah, blah feeding stuff and put that over. So the three were now, I nearly killed myself because I'm 77 now. Eventually, the following day, they looked actually worse.
Oh,
so I found him, and he said he thinks we put too much of those crystals, because those crystal things apparently forms a jelly to hold the water. Now I've put in tonic water, 2 liter tonic water, because the leaves, the roots are quite shallow, to see if Watering there, and the little fruit shame, it's still staying there.
But maybe it wants gin with the tonic water. Sorry, I couldn't help it.
I should have given them gin.
Cherise, any suggestions on what's going on here?
Anthea, you have this love-hate relationship with your tree tomatoes.
I know.
They love you and they hate you. You love them and they hate you. It's really mean of them. But I think, honestly, that the more attention and fiddling you're doing with them, the more they're sulking. I'm starting to think, now that you've done all you can, step back and let everything settle down and make sure to spray the fruit with some oleum or some very natural pesticide to keep it from being bitten or affected in any other way. Keep up with extremely regular watering and no more fiddling around the roots. Let's see what happens.
Okay.
Give it a chance to breathe and find itself.
No. Gin and tonic.
You drink the gin and tonic.
Gin and tonic.
That's like the perfect solution. Leave the trees alone. You enjoy the gin and tonic and let us know if it comes right at the end. Somerset West. A story to be continued. The saga of the tree tomatoes. Right. A tough one from Kia, who is wanting to grow blueberries at home. And I don't blame her because they've got some blinking expensive in the shops and they're so lovely to eat. How easy or difficult are blueberries to grow?
So they can be quite temperamental in that they need this really cold snap in winter and they need really good heat but no wind, and providing these conditions can be quite difficult in Cape Town, particularly the no wind part.
Yeah, I'll say.
And then they're very particular about their micronutrients and their feeding, so most berry bushes like it a little bit acidic, so anything with ammonia or sulfate in it can help with that, or pine needles, rooibos mulch, but keeping that soil slightly acidic. So it's often better to grow them in a pot where you can control the soil mixture that you're using, and also to be able to move them if the wind is too much, and also be able to put them in a really hot spot and keep up with that regular watering. They just need a lot of TLC. You need to check on them almost twice a day.
Gosh.
But once you get your crop of berries, it's all worth it.
Absolutely, and you're going to be so glad you put in the effort. Okay, thanks very much for the advice. It sounds like a pot is going to be the best solution there, Kia. Let's go to a voice note. This one's on granadillas, I believe. Let's take a listen.
Hi, Pepper. It's Jill here. I just wanted to ask Cherise, I know it's not actually a fruit tree, but I have a granadilla growing in our garden, which is absolutely laden with fruit, but they're huge and they're still green. I'm just wondering how long it takes for them to ripen on the creeper vine, whatever you call it. I mean, it's about 6 weeks now that these things are still there, and no sign that they're turning that sort of dark purplish color. Many thanks. This is Jill in Higgervale.
Thanks, Joel. Any advice?
Yes, they definitely sit there and hang. They form so quickly, one gets excited because they almost appear, it seems, overnight from the finishing of flowering. But the ripening can take anything from 2 months to 3 months.
That long?
Okay. It can take that long, definitely. And they need the heat, they need the sunlight, and you need a little bit of patience. But often what I find when I'm getting impatient is I pick them when they're still slightly green, cut them, and I taste it. And sometimes it's already starting to taste sweet and it's enjoyable. But just hang in there. It is going to do it. It's just that quick formation leads you to expect a quick eat, and you just got to wait for them to finish their ripening process. And it's usually closer to the end of March.
And lucky you to have a flourishing granadilla with lots of fruit. My absolute favorite fruit, Cherise. I wish, because they're, again, getting so expensive in the shops as well.
I will bring you some. I've never had one before, and now that I've got one, it's an absolute hooligan. I'm terrified of it.
Will they keep on giving year after year, or is it something that's got to be replanted and started from scratch again?
No, it keeps on giving. They can be quite long-lived, and I prune mine back because it's determined to grow everywhere where I don't want it. I've got a nice big section of it, and I prune it back quite harshly now that it's well-established, and it tolerates it beautifully, and I know it's rejuvenating it.
Okay. Wow. Watch this space. Okay. So Jill, a little bit more patience. If they're not in and ripened within the next 3 months, give us a call. We can answer the next part of the mystery. But it sounds like just a little bit more time is what is needed. Back to the lines we go. I guess a cactus is a fruit. Roger in Durbanville. Good afternoon.
Hi. My question relates to a large cactus, which I never planted. It appeared in my garden a few years ago and got bigger and bigger. But never really changed its shape. Now, in the last, I would say, 5 or 6 months, a shaft started growing out of the middle of it, virtually grew as you looked at it. That shaft is now, I would say, between 30 and 40 feet high. At the top, it's opened out into about 20 branches.
My goodness.
And on the end of the branches are, they almost look like flowering shrubs, quite dense. Now, I wondered, is it now likely to die? Well, first of all, I wonder what it is. Secondly, is it likely to die and the shaft likely to come crashing down?
So it does actually sound like it's flowering stalk. If you're sure that shaft is attached to the actual cactus, if it is directly from the middle, just to check, sometimes a seed can germinate from within something else and appear to be part of it. Great. So then it's likely to be the inflorescence that's forming, and the flowers could be hidden within the green tufts or still appearing. And the shaft is very likely to die. Once it's finished flowering, it will come crashing down, but slowly they hold on to it and they kind of break off in pieces. If you're nervous, rather chop it off. And there is a good possibility the plants that do not flower for years and years and then put so much energy into something so spectacular don't make it once they've finished putting all that energy into the flower stalk. So I think at some stage, rather just cut it off and see what it's going to do. And before it starts to brown and die, remove it. And hopefully what I'm hoping for is that you're going to trick the plant into thinking, well, that didn't finish the process as I wished it would. I'll just have to do that all over again. And it'll survive the next 5 years before it has enough energy to grow another stalk.
Are they quite unusual or are they quite common?
Unusual.
It sounds absolutely spectacular, Roger. I mean, what an amazing thing to have just someone arrive in the garden. is quite something. Okay, very interesting call. Thank you so much. And let us know how it goes, Roger. I'd be intrigued to hear whether it is the kind that gives up the ghost and comes crashing down or decides it will try again. So keep us posted on that one. What a lovely thing to have happen. A surprise plant that you didn't plant, didn't know was there, has been quietly sitting there all these years and suddenly erupts
30 to 40 feet high
into this massive display. Sort of thinking of the dying swan, that fabulous final solo on stage, giving it everything and then wiping itself out is quite extraordinary. A WhatsApp from somebody with strawberries saying, I laid pine needles under all of my strawberries and had an absolutely bumper crop. But sadly, the day I went to harvest them, the rats had completely wiped them out. Oh my goodness, what a huge loss as well. I'm so sorry. Irene on the WhatsApp would like to know how often to water pawpaw trees and anything she should know about watering them.
You need to water them regularly. They have quite a shallow root system and you need to give them a significant amount of water, because with that shallow root system, you're trying to encourage them to put it as deep as possible in the heat of our really dry summers. So a deep but regular watering. You need to check and feel the soil for when it's dry, but on a hot, windy week, I would say every second day, and when it's a little bit cooler and moister, maybe every third or fourth day. But the trick is really to get your finger deep into the ground and to make sure you're giving a bit more of a drench than a shallow, quick spray.
Okay, thanks for that. I'm going to ask my producer to tweet the photograph that Vera mailed to us of what I'm pretty sure is a spider's nest, and she thinks is a spider's nest, but we're going to ask Therese to confirm for us whether it is and go a little further. Vera basically mailed us a photograph of what looks like a spiky white fruit spun of gossamer in the middle of her plant, asking if this is a spider's nest, will they stay outside or is there any risk that they will come inside? Because she really doesn't like the thought of that whole extended family taking up residence in her home. Charisse, you took a look at the photo. It looked to me like a spider's nest.
You're
do you agree?
Absolutely correct. It's a spider's nest. And I know that, you know, people are arachnophobic and a bit creepy crawly about spiders. But it is really a treasured thing to happen in your garden. It feels that the spiders are safe enough. They're wonderful predators for all the bugs we don't enjoy, especially flies and mosquitoes. They are very unlikely to come inside the house because their food source and their home is outside. But having said that, if the nest is really close and the spiders are each looking for a little space, she might find one or two in. If she's really arachnophobic and scared of that, she can gently cut the branches and leaves that are holding the spider's nest off, but really gently with a shoebox underneath or a tissue box, it can drop in and she can rehome it to some further corner in her garden. They'll still hatch out perfectly well.
Just not right next to her bedroom window.
Exactly. Hopefully try catch the mommy spider who sometimes stays nearby to keep an eye on her.
on her crop. I'm laughing because you have triggered a memory of, it must have been about standard two, I think. I took what I thought was an expired spider's nest to school for show and tell and left it overnight.
Uh-oh.
And it was not expired. We came into the classroom the next morning to find the entire family had taken residence on the ceiling of the classroom. I was not very popular with the teacher or with the rest of the class. So parents, be warned, that show and tell thing, if they're still doing it, that's one item not to take into the classroom. All right. I think we can fit in one very quick last question from Jerry. And again, I think a green pepper is a fruit, isn't
it? Yes, I'm happy with green peppers.
Okay. Why do the leaves on my green peppers turn brown and fall off? He asks.
So strange enough, I needed to know if they turned yellow first. So yellowing and then brown, soft yellow brown, is overwatering, and dry, crispy brown is underwatering. And if there was any discoloration before they went either soft or crispy brown, it would be a lack of micronutrients, and you need a little dose of trail mix according to the instructions on the bottle. It provides micronutrients. It's available at any nursery. However, if it was just pure yellow brown, either which way, it's a watering issue.
Okay, thanks so much. I said the last question, but I think we can squeeze in this one. It's very quick. And what would the gardening segment be without a lemon tree? It's an easy one, I think, Cherise. The question is, I know you can get lemons grown without their seeds these days. Do you get lemon trees without the thorns?
Yes, you get ones that are far less thorny. My problem is I don't know what their cultivar names are, okay. But you can go into your local nursery and they most particularly will be able to help you. They're breeding them to be more comfortable to work with and have in the garden all the time. So yes, but just bear in mind the thorns are a deterrent, as always, for anything that might eat your fruit.
Right.
So they do serve a purpose. But when it's deterring you, it's not as pleasant.
And having put the slice of lemon into the gin cocktail, I think that's a good place to stop. Cherise Fullion, lovely to have you with us. Find her at Kirsten Bosch and pick that gigantic brain about all its flower knowledge and plant knowledge. Back with us again towards the end of February.
Thanks, Pippa.
See you then.